"Dad, Dad, I'm gonna spear a fish." And with this warning, my son tromps down the trailhead to these mountain ponds. And as he's tromping, he looks back and says, You can cook it in the campfire for our dinner." Some context is important here. We are at a 5-day camping trip near the Maroon Bells in Aspen, Colorado. And we're at, for the last 2 years, we've been to this, what they call a wilderness adventure camp. And it's a camp for kids and families where you learn certain outdoor skills and you're with your family. And it's one of those sort of moments where there's no technology and you're just present together. No matter if it rains on your tent for like 4 days straight, right? And so we're at this camp, and my friend Simon Harrison runs the camp. And Simon is this really incredible man who his passion is for education and for exposing kids and families to nature. And so Simon, of the many things that Simon has taught me, he's taught me to support your kids in their adventures. And it's one of those things as a parent where you really have to, it's hard. Because it's hard to support kids in adventure because there's a whole lot that could go wrong, right, as a parent. So you have to, like, pull yourself back. And the kids at the camp, they had gotten this idea that they were going to do some spear fishing. Now, keep in mind, this is completely impractical. We have nothing to do this right? And so, but the kids had all kind of rallied together. This is what they want to do. And there's my son leading the charge, right? And so I'm sitting next to him, and I'm telling myself over and over again, support his adventure. I'm like having to force myself to be present. And he's on the edge of the pond, right in the dirt. His hands are sort of gripped on the bank, and I'm sitting right there next to him, looking out across the pond. And I say to him, "Okay, Trey, what's the first step?" So he says, "Dad, we gotta build a spear." So we build a spear. And I said, "Okay, Trey," and I kept just really trying to let him lead. I said, "Okay, Trey, what's the next step?" And he says this to me, "We need to walk around the whole pond and sort of check out the patterns of the fish and the way they swim." So we walk around the pond, and I'm just waiting for his little boy energy to come out, and he starts talking about there's a big fallen log in there, and he saw a lot of fish coming around the log, and so his hypothesis was, that's where we're gonna spear the fish. So then, all of a sudden, we're being patient. I say, "Okay, what's next?" He says, "Throw the spear in, Dad." So I throw it in. It's hopeless, right? And then he says, "Go get it, Dad." So I'm in the pond. I'm like, I mean, it's cold. You feel like the muck and mud at the bottom of the pond, all that pond scum. And I'm getting the spear, and I get back out. Okay, Trey, what's next? It was obvious. "Throw the spear again, Dad," right? So this went on again and again and again until finally I'm like, "Okay, this doesn't seem to be working. Do you have an idea of what's next?" And so he says, "Oh, you're right. This doesn't work." So he starts digging in the mud by that bank, and he's going to make this intricate tunnel system, and the fish are going to like swim into this tunnel. And so I'm just supporting his adventure, right? But then at this time, we're getting sticks, and we've got this cool contraption because some trout is going to jump up there, right? And then he says to me, "Dad, I think it's time that we split up our energy." He says, "I want you to go in the pond and to spear a fish, and I'm going to keep working on this intricate trap," right? So here I am in this pond. This is impossible, people. There's no way you can spear this thing. And so there we are, right in the dirt. And I remember how dirty we were, and I remember our jeans are ruined and they're ripped, and out of this like pure kid energy, there are spearing girls all around that pond. They loved it, right? And then there's other boys, and then all of a sudden, after like hours of being lost in this adventure, we started to have some of the messy community come out, right? A kid was crying because he hadn't eaten and he was starving. Another kid was crying because he really thought we were going to catch a fish, right? And it was obvious by this time, no one was going to catch a fish. And then, of course, there was just dirt underneath our fingernails. And we were just in the dirt with our kids. And there was this sense that there was this joy and there was this love that welled up. In the midst of trying to help this kid and trying to, you know, jeans were ripped. But in the midst of all this messiness, from the dirt, of this messy community, life was flourishing. There was this joy, there was this exuberance. The kids were alive. And the funny part is, we totally failed, right? There is no fish for dinner, right? And it's a good thing we had other food. But in the midst of this muddy experience, life was flourishing all around me. And so dirt is this filth, it's this grime, it's this dust, right? And dirt is this mixture of rocks and clay and organic matter. And I remind you that dirt has worms and ants and fungi and bacteria and air and water. When you put your hand in dirt, I'm going to serve communion later, and so I'm not going to put my hand in the dirt after I told you there's ants and fungi. When you put your hand in dirt, or when the dirt and the grime touches you, we immediately want to wash it off, right? We want to get rid of that. We want to get clean of that dirt. And so, sorry, Sigourney. Yes. I'm going to let you fix that. And so in this dirt, in this literally this mess of dirt and grime, the most fascinating thing happens is that out of this dirt, out of what happens in this messy stuff, something flourishes, right? And life begins to move. And without this dirt of messy community, no plants and no vegetables and no flowers could ever grow. So it's from the dirt that life begins to flourish. It's all this stuff working together that makes for flourishing. And in the first century world, the world where the New Testament came from, there was a lot of messiness going on in that world. The first century was having changes like no other moment in human history. Rome, with its great movement to transform the world, was building great roads across the ancient world, especially across Palestine. And as urban development started to grow, so cities were being fortified, and more people were moving to the city. But 90% of the people were involved in work with the land or work with the fishing industry. Most people were fishers or farmers, or if they were lucky, they got to work with livestock. So in this world where most of us would have been fishermen or farmers, stuff begins to change because Rome needs more food to transport to the city. Jerusalem needs more food to get to its capital city. And so that put a crunch down on the local farmer, the local fisherman. All of a sudden, all the fish they catch, they had to give a huge percentage to be carted off to Rome or Jerusalem. All of a sudden, all their excess crops became scarce. And so out of this world, early Christians had this instinctual sort of pull towards community. They knew that they had a deep need for one another. When there was this sense of production anxiety, we cannot produce enough to give to Rome, to give to Herod Antipas, who was the ruler of the Jews at the time, so we have to come together and lean on one another and support one another. And so out of the New Testament, we have these absolutely beautiful commands. We're commanded to love one another. We're commanded to outdo one another in showing honor. We're commanded to live in harmony with one another, to don't pass judgment on one another, to welcome one another, bear one another's burdens, and be kind to one another, and not to lie to one another, and to encourage one another. And this is just a small sampling of all the one another's. This deep sense that out of this anxiety to produce, we need to lean on one another. We need to find some fresh air somewhere else besides what our jobs are doing for us. And so there's these great one another's. Do you want to know the problem with one another's? We're human, right? And we all have this grumpiness, and there's this sense of we're fragile and we're frail. And there's moments where we don't live up to what we are trying to live out in community. And that frailty and that sense of irritableness, right? Are you with me? And then there's a sense of those strange idiosyncrasies that we all have. So to be human is to live in this frailty. But we live in this frail moment in light of this awesome command to be with one another, right? To be in this messy community. And so we live with this and these beautiful commands, and we live in the dirt. And that's what makes the metaphor of community and dirt so important for us. It's from the dirt of messy community that our lives all flourish. So then in the book of Acts, the book that tells sort of the early movement of Christianity, the very first Christians, what they were doing, in chapter 2, the passage you saw, and then in chapter 4, very identical passages, we get this awesome moment in the life of the church. This moment where community was what it should be, where people were leaning on one another, where needs were being met, where there was a bunch of sharing, there were one another's happening everywhere. But we know the reality of what it means to have this human skin, the messiness of what all that can mean for us, the hopes and the longings and the high expectations, and then those moments where by the very end of the day, we come up flat and fail one another and let one another down. I have been there, haven't you? When you start your day off with such a hope to serve one another and be there with one another, and by the end of it, it's like, man, who is that person? You know, and you have this sense of, I've lost that vision that I began my day with. And so these two snapshots that they give us in chapter 2, I want to just talk them through with you really quickly. And the first, it says this in Acts 2:42, it says, these early Christians devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of the bread and to prayers. So from the dirt of community with one another came this deep conviction about devoting, about these practices, about what it meant to be in messy community, right? In this messy community of early Christians, we're going to be committed to being lifelong learners. We're going to be committed to the friendships we build with one another, to actually caring what one another is going through. We're going to be committed to the breaking of bread, this incredibly deep and rich symbol of a God who loves us and empowers us and will always fill our needs. And then lastly, to prayers. Now, prayer is not this simple thing, right? Prayer is this thing that opens us into another person's world. When we hear a prayer, we can't just run and hide. We have to remember. It opens us to say, oh my gosh, that person is going through a great battle, right? And so when we pray for someone, we're reminding ourselves of the battle and the pain. We're living in this messy reality with one another. And so from that first verse, we learned that it's from the dirt that devotion grows. It's from the dirt that we're challenged richly with one another to be these lifelong learners, to become friendship and have a deep sense of community with one another, to break the bread and to pray for one another. It's fascinating to me that on our own, apart from community, we are not challenged to get into the messy life with one another. I really doubt that our amazing fishing expedition would have happened if it weren't for the 20 kids running around the pond, yelling and screaming, we're gonna spear a fish, right? And so then the passage goes on, and it moves forward in 2:43, and it says, awe came upon everyone, because many wonders and signs were being done by the apostles. And then in 4:33, I told you they're almost parallel passages, so I kind of put them together for us. With great power, the apostles gave their testimony to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. There are moments in our humanness, there are moments in that messy community where lasting fruit and amazing blooming can happen, right? I think of the Olympics when I think of this blooming. These athletes have prepared themselves for years upon years upon years. And then when they do that like amazing ice skating triple lip thing, it's amazing, right? Or when we see that wide receiver catch that pass in the end zone, we are awed by this sense of that they have bloomed. They have trained themselves to be the very best they can be. And so this passage teaches us that in community, we learn what it means to have life. And we learn also what it means to have death. Because in community with one another, in the messy community, we don't only celebrate those resurrection moments, but we celebrate those moments where there are pain and there are heartbreak and there are losses that are almost intolerable. So from the dirt of community, we learn what it means to fade. We learn what it means to flourish. We learn with one another what it means to live out this resurrection growing in our midst. The next passage moves on and it says, all who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. And then the exact passage in 4, it says, now the whole group of those who believed were one of heart and soul, and no one claimed private ownership of any possession, but everything they owned was held in common. Now this one's fascinating for us. All throughout the New Testament, we see the early Christians being incredibly generous with their material possessions. This is like the striking hard one for us to hear. In the midst of a world changing, right? In the midst of all that they cannot produce enough to maintain their livelihood, their lives. Many of them are sharecroppers, meaning huge, larger sums are being given to the Roman authority or to Herod Antipas, the Jewish authority. But these early Christians found a way in community to give to one another. And we have seen examples of our community of those who have given out of their abundance for someone in need. That's absolutely amazing. So from the dirt, when we begin to listen to one another in community, generosity grows. We learn to see that maybe we have something that we can give that can help another person. And it can be as simple as a lawnmower or as simple as sending a child who couldn't afford it to summer camp, right? It's all of this amazing generosity that grows. So in our world too, we live with the reality of this production anxiety. And so all of us, we try to keep up with the Joneses, as we say, or we try to keep this perpetual rat race while healthcare costs are on the rise, while housing costs are on the rise, while our kids' education costs are like skyrocketed. And all of us continue. We put in more hours, we work harder. And in the midst of this, what we need, what we long for to keep us from feeling human is community. Because it's in this messy community that we can wrestle with this production anxiety and start to talk with one another and start to learn what it means to free us up from this obsession with more and more things, or what it means just to survive a culture where production is the dominant voice, right? It teaches us in community that we are more than what we produce. We are human beings who underneath it all have something far more to live out than just to produce. It's from the dirt of this messy community that we all learn that life flourishes. That's what From the Dirt is all about. From the Dirt is about Christian community saying no to all the production crazy anxiety and to say yes to flourishing with one another. Yes to this devotion to learn deeper in this God. Yes to this resurrection lifestyle. And yes to being generous with our hearts. And that's where we see pure beauty and transformation come. How many of you have seen Little Miss Sunshine? Oh, pure amazingness. So the whole movie spins on Olive, right? Olive got runner-up in her local New Mexico branch Miss America pageant. Right? And so runner-up means you unfortunately don't get to move on. But she gets a phone call in the midst of this that she, the person who won, could not attend. So she's going to California to be a part of the Little Miss Sunshine pageant. And she's thrilled. There's like 200 problems though. First of all, she doesn't fit the stereotype of what a Miss America pageant is about. Look at her. She's filled with spunk. She's got these glasses. She doesn't even understand that world. And to add this, her family is a mess. An absolute mess. Okay, are you ready? Look at this. Okay, mom is like the saint of the family. Not only is she bringing in the money, but she's taking care of all the needs. Dad is a self-help unemployed guru who just had his book contract turned down like multiple times, right? And then grandpa just got kicked out of the retirement home because he was selling heroin. Can you talk about messiness, right? The brother hasn't spoken in 9 months because he read Friedrich Nietzsche and he's trying to get into the Air Force. And he finds out in the midst of this journey that he's colorblind. So his hopes of being in the Air Force are crashed, right? And then there's the uncle. The uncle has to stay with this crazy family because he committed suicide and he's heartbroken. So this is quite a bunch, right? Quite a messy community. But they all get in that minivan and they all travel to California to help Olive to live out her dream, right? And so all the mishaps, with all the mess that's going on, they have this passion to get Olive to this Little Miss Sunshine pageant. So they finally get there. A couple of problems here. When they show up, they begin to realize, oh, grandpa dies on the way. He's in the back of the minivan. It's absolutely insane. And when they get there, they realize that they have been so caught up in everything that they really haven't helped Olive with her all the things she needed to do to prepare for the beauty pageant. But grandpa had helped Olive with a song called Super Freak, a strip burlesque song and routine. And so Olive has no idea. She thinks this is just so cool to do this little dance routine. She comes out in a top hat, right? There we go. She comes out in a top hat and like this suit. This is not what you do when you're trying to win a Little Miss Sunshine pageant, right? And so the brother and the dad start to freak out when they see that, oh my goodness, look what we've done. And they're like, we gotta pull her. But Olive thinks she's supposed to be at this beauty pageant, right? And so then she gets up there and Super Freak is blaring out of the stereo. And the only guy in the place is like the sound guy who's like into it, you know? And all the moms and all the kids, like, it's so sad. They start like catcalling her and they start leaving. And then like, I don't even know what you call her, but the like head mom, the like den mom is like, pull her off the stage. This cannot happen. Finally, dad wakes up and is like, you are not taking my daughter off the stage. And all this tension is mounting, and you're like, you're watching this, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is just insane, right? She's taking her clothes off and Super Freak, and then all of a sudden, dad gets on the stage. And dad, who's been obsessed with his own self, comes out of his shell and starts dancing to Super Freak next to his daughter. And then all of a sudden, the brother comes on stage. And then all of a sudden, the uncle gets on stage. And lastly, mom is dancing to Super Freak. And it's like this, it's this unbelievable epiphany. Here's a picture of it. They are going to do this thing together as a family. And what's so beautiful about this, from this dirt of messy community, from these lives that are really all messed up and not perfect, they found a way for life to flourish. They taught this girl that no matter what, she is a beautiful person. No matter the standards of this whole beauty pageant, this little girl, Olive, is beautiful and worthy and has dignity. And that's what the Christian community does its very best. We are people who have deep, great needs. We are people that are from the dirt. And from the dirt of our authenticity and the rawness of what it means to be human, life flourishes. And so this morning, I ask you simply this. Will you plant yourself in the messy community of St. Andrew Wildflower? And will you give your prayers, your presence, your gifts, and your service to this community?